Well, good afternoon, everyone. I hope you enjoyed lunch. We've got a great session for you today. So the topic is non-discriminatory and fair pricing in insurance, bridging research with practice. And our presenter today is Dr. Fei Huang. So she's a senior lecturer at UNSW in the School of Risk and Actuarial Studies. It's a school department. I always get these things wrong. She's also the lead of data and AI tech at the UNSW Business AI Lab, and she's investigator of the IRIS Knowledge Hub. So her research, particularly her recent research, looks at the intersection of insurance, AI, machine learning, and fairness, and we'll see a lot of that in today's presentation, so that's something to look forward to. She's hardworking and pretty prolific. There is a long list of prizes that I could read out, but I won't. But it's worth saying she's award-winning in this particular topic of discrimination and fairness. So we're in for a treat. And apart from that, I'll hand over to her and I'll see you again for Q&A.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for coming to this session. So this session is about bridging the gap between practice and academia. So the reason is that as academic, I always have a desire to collaborate with the industry because that's the only way that I can understand what's happening in the real world so that I can do meaningful research to solve real world problems. So I'm very glad that this research was based on collaboration with Michael Sturgeff, who was unfortunately not available to attend this year's summit in person. So I will present both our parts myself. So in case there's any error made, that solely belongs to myself, not Michael. So the first part will be focusing on the practical applications. So this is Michael. Michael has spent the last decade building customer product solutions for travel insurance problems and helping both insurtech brands launch and incumbents obsess over new benefits and coverages for their existing customers. So currently, he is a chief underwriting officer at Passport Card Travel Insurance, looking after the end-to-end actuarial underwriting, reinsurance, and analytics for the newly launched travel insurance MGA in Australia. When I talk to Michael and say, Michael, you are joining a new startup, then how did you manage to launch a new product? And he told me that there are three things. Firstly is the customers. Secondly is a product and coverages. Thirdly is the data sets. Well, as a new business, let's look at what the travel insurance in Passport Card Australia is doing. So they offer the travel insurance product, but it's quite different from the traditional ones. This product provides instant payouts on approved claims anytime, anywhere, by just loading up this Passport Card. And the company, actually, they pre-load up some expected claims based on their predictive analytics programs so that the customers could use this card. Say, if you're traveling to Bali and you need to see a doctor, you can directly use this Passport Card to pay for your claims instantly and settle your claims. There's no out-of-pocket payments while you are there. So it's a unique claim solution to enable instant payouts for overseas medical issues, delayed luggage, or stolen cash. So this is a way. So basically all this, the claims would be settled through just a phone call, and it's very streamlined claim assessment process. And as Michael developing this product with his team, he also encountered some challenges. So here we list some of them. The first one is that this is a unique product in the market. There's no access on instant payouts. So the claim frequency is much higher than the traditional products. And also the claims could be quite different to what the market is seeing, and the customer's behavior would also be different given this new design of this product. And also the instant claims mean a more streamlined assessment of claims, which is quite different from the traditional products. And because of these challenges, Michael also trying to figure out, okay, given this environment, how can we ensure that the insurance prices is fair to their customers? Then the first challenge that he met is sparse data and different data issues. By saying that, we mean that because this is a new product, there's no similar product anywhere in the market, so it's very sparse data set that he could rely on. And even if he want to look at, you know, maybe how about the market data or the historical claims experience, it's quite different. Think about that it's a unique product in the market. And also, if you look at a historical claim, say pre-COVID, then the behavior between pre-COVID and post-COVID are also quite different. I guess this is not a unique problem for startups. Even for, you know, existing business, established companies, if you want to design a new product or open up a new line of business, you would also face similar problems, right? So then what can Michael do with that? What if you have a lack of historical data and experience? Then he look at, okay, what's the standard solution or what does the textbook tell us? So there are potentially three options here. Let's look at one by one and see if any of them can help us solve his problem. The first solution is that how about we use the market premiums? The problem with this solution is that this product is very unique. So the uniqueness means that the competitors usually, the actuaries could try to collect some quotes from the competitors or look at what the market is doing and try to reverse engineer and deconstruct the competitor's price and use that as the initial pricing for this product. But the uniqueness of the product means that these competitor deconstructions are less relevant. And also, there are large differences in prices between existing Australian travel insurers. Michael told me that the difference could be as large as threefold between the cheapest and most expensive. Given this big variation, which prices should he rely on, right? So there's not a lot of confidence here in terms of the first approach. How about the second approach? Maybe how about we look at historical data? The company maybe already have some historical claims data over the years. Looking at the historical data, there's another problem because we are currently in a post-COVID stage. Well, the pre-COVID experience was less relevant due to the emerging risks. And we can see that the travel insurance premiums actually had increased 70% between 2020 and 2023. So the different market environment and different premiums, historical experience, tell us that this approach is also problematic. How about the last one? Or our hope is on the last one. Looking at the overseas data, this is another approach that we could try to look at. However, the behaviors between different the behaviors can be quite different between customers from different countries. For example, Australians travel one every 2.5 years, while the Europeans travel multiple times a year. And if you look at the premiums, actually the average premium they spend on travel insurance are quite different between different countries. So because of these differences, relying on overseas data can also be problematic. Unfortunately, none of this approach give us a perfect solution. This is the first challenge. I will respond to each of them in my part of the talk. And the second challenge that Michael and his team faced is anti-discrimination issues. So I guess many of us know that a couple of years ago, the Actuaries Institute and the Human Rights Commission has a joint collaboration to develop the guidance resources on how to use on the artificial intelligence and the discrimination in the insurance pricing space. So Michael and his team turned to this guidance and try to figure out a way to provide fair pricing for their customers. And also bear in mind this is a new product. So what we understand is that, generally speaking, health risk increases with age. But how do you read travelers over 80 years old when you have very little or sparse claims data to those age groups? So the market experience tells us that usually people, when they are getting older, there are higher health risks. But the older people also travel less, and you have very limited claims data to look at. So that's, again, leads to the previously we discussed the sparse claims data problem to those high age groups. And what does the guidance resources tell us? It says that a sharp discontinuity at age 90 to a much higher average rate might be argued as unfair by someone aged 91. So that is written in the guidance resources. And because of this, Michael and his team trying to find a way, okay, then how can we determine the right rate relativity at the age 90. Oh, given this is a new experience, How about we look at the market's experience and figure out, okay, what the competitors are doing? And here are the table with three competitors' prices, the relativities. So you can see that each of them are doing differently. For competitor one, it smooths out the premiums above age 80. So basically, there's no difference above 90. For competitor B and competitor C, they both increase their premium at age 90. So they use different approaches. Again, if the market is not doing consistent, is not using consistent approach for this, then what should Michael, you know, do? See, he encountered another uncertainty here. So in the end, Michael suggested that he just smoothed out everyone above age 80 just to make sure that there are no unfair discrimination for those of very old ages, given there's very sparse data sets there. So this is another challenge that Michael faced. A challenge three is actually also related to the uniqueness of the products and also the sparse of the data sets. For travel insurance companies, usually they have customers who have pre-existing medical conditions. And these conditions can be very unique, very rare. And if you usually the decision can be made using an automated online process. However, when the data is very, when this customer is having a very unique situation, then it's very likely that your data set does not have those historical experience there, or it's very poorly represented in your historical data. So if in this case, if you rely on this automated online process, then it could be unfairly, you know, those people could be unfairly treated because there is some misrepresentation bias there. Their smaller group is an imbalanced data set. So they could be excluded or mispriced because of this. So then what did Michael and his team do? Well, they decided to use the offline approach. Rather than relying on this automated decision-making process, they just engaged with a registered nurse to evaluate the cases individually and to determine the decisions based on this offline approach. So this is the policy decision based on manual underwriting to minimize the potential harm. And another area is called price optimization. So I really appreciate that Hugh has given us a wonderful introduction in the previous session. So price optimization is pretty, currently in the Australian market, is pretty widely used, especially by the general insurers. However, for a startup or a line of business who does not have lots of rich data sets, then from Hugh's talk, we understand that there can be problematic, right? Similarly, Michael also encountered these issues because optimization requires high quality, a good wealth of conversion data to understand demand. And it may not be the most appropriate for the new provider with little data, and there could be lots of problematic decision-making out of a poor data set. So Michael suggested that it's a good idea to formalize a company's expectation around, you know, whether and how to do price optimization within your own pricing policy. So these are all the challenges that Michael would like to share. Hopefully I convey the right message. Now, as an academic, I would like to talk about how I perceive this problem in general and response to some of the specific questions that were raised by Michael. Here, I just give you, as referred to, you know, in the title, we would touch on both discrimination and fairness. So these two concepts are not exactly the same to me. So firstly, let's define discrimination. Discrimination is usually specifically related to some protected attributes. For example, gender, race, nationality, ethnicity, marital status. So these sort of protected attributes regulated in law or some policies. And if usually in practice, if you don't use those protected attributes, which I believe everyone don't use them, if there's a regulation there, then you are fine in terms of you don't have direct discrimination. But there's still a risk that you have indirect discrimination. That's because those protected attributes can be complexly correlated with the other attributes that you are using, especially if there are some big data sets and you are using a complex black box models. So this is a discrimination issue. However, there are also fairness issues, which definitely cover discrimination. But more broadly, I mean, every customer deserves a fair price, right? Not just those with protected attributes. So as a business, you would want to provide fair prices to every customer with respect to all their attributes. So biases, I would think, is a broader concept that covers not only just the protected attributes, but all the attributes you consider of a customer. And here I draw a plot that I try to use this to mimic the algorithmic decision-making process. And I would recommend that if your company thinking about doing things fairly, say fair pricing, then think about what is the end-to-end life cycle of your business. So the bias and discrimination could happen at any stage of the end-to-end process. Think about your business. There can be human beings, components, data components, and algorithms. And there's a circle there. And at each step, there can be biases. I'll just give you some examples. From human to data, usually the data sets are collected by human beings, right? And there can be historical biases if the human being, for example, in the U.S., certain minority racial groups have been being discriminated in the history. And if you use that part of the historical data, put that into your algorithm, then you will generate some discrimination outputs. That's guaranteed. So that's a historical bias. And also there can be behavioral bias. Whenever there's a human being there, there's always a level of potential behavioral bias there. And from data to algorithm, if you directly use some protected attributes or attributes not allowed, then you face a direct discrimination issue. And if you only use a smaller data set, but actually a bigger data set should tell the right story and you omitted certain important rating variables, then you face the omitted variable bias. And you can, you know, your data set may be sampled from the population and you face a sampling bias. There can also be representation bias, like certain minority groups are not well represented in your data sets. Then if you use that into your algorithm, then those parts of data can be ignored. So there's misrepresentation bias, and then that's related to the sparse and different data issues that mentioned by Michael earlier. And there are also aggregation bias when you try to aggregate multiple data sets together. From algorithm to human being, there can be proxy discrimination if you use lots of data attributes that's complexly correlated with the attributes. And, you know, it's not guaranteed to have this discrimination. It's just to have a risk. Oops. And then there can also be algorithmic bias. For example, if you have your model is misspecified, then there can be algorithmic bias. It's all model risks. And evaluation bias, you choose the wrong evaluation measure, there can be evaluation bias. So here are just some examples. There are a lot more. So I just want to say that discrimination bias is a very broad topic. And I think it's almost guaranteed that everyone's decision-making must contain some level of biases, maybe some level of discrimination as well. It's very hard to completely eliminate all the biases there. But what we can do is that we can have a good understanding of where it is. What can be the sources of this bias? Some of them are more obvious, more severe than the others. Then we should definitely mitigate those risks. Discrimination is a more important issue compared to bias because discrimination is legally protected. So there are some legally protected attributes that you need to be careful. Here I use a general insurance pricing process to further illustrate this. In general insurance pricing process, you have data components, but who select the data sets? Human being, right? Who generate the data sets? Human being. So there's always human components there. And when you use a data set, you have to think about, are there any biases in my data sets? Then you put the data into the model. Is the model correctly specified? Right, and also have their omitted variable bias. You can ask yourself a whole bunch of questions to make sure that the whole process is fair. And then cost modeling, demand modeling, they can all be summarized as statistical or machine learning tasks because these can be regarded as a predictive model. And then combining these two, you can run the price optimization. Here, I'll give you a little bit of math formula. And then you can, based on this, you can either optimize your profits or market volume, and you get your price outputs. So this price outputs would be part of your data collection. Go to the top one again when you look at the future business. So this is an example of general insurance pricing process. Now, how to tackle the data quality issues? So Michael presented two challenges related to data quality issues when you are doing new business. The first one is the sparse data sets. For this one, I would recommend you could potentially reduce this risk by looking at some data augmentation techniques potentially. For example, there's some recent research on using synthetic data generation to improve your data quality, to make the the minority groups more representable in your data sets. And in terms of the different data sets, there are the recent research focusing on solving the data shifting problems. This is very similar to the problem that Michael is facing, where we consider that you are having different training and testing data sets. Training data set is a data set available to you. Testing data set is a data set that your product will generate. So because you have this data shifting problem, the inconsistency between training and the testing data, there are some techniques now available for you. For example, the stable learning algorithms. They try to solve this issue by generalize the patterns that is generalizable for your case. There are two scenarios here. Firstly, if you are doing a new business that you don't have any testing data or you don't have any data at all, maybe on the first day of your business, then you can use a proactive approach where you look at a historical data, maybe the market data from the international different countries, and also say the historical experience, pre-COVID data sets, and the market experience. But you know that it's not good for your business, right? But you also know that there are something that's useful. You are all doing travel insurance, and these are the outstanding customers. So you know that there's something useful, something not useful. So you can potentially rely on some techniques and your understanding of the difference between the different business and data sets to try to extract the pattern from the data that is usable, generalizable, and then use that for your business. So basically remove those information that is irrelevant to your business, only extract the useful information. So this is a proactive approach. Reactive approach is that, for example, you have done this business for a few years, so now you've got some testing data sets, maybe some claims data that you can rely on for this business, but it's very small, maybe just 2 years of data sets. And on the other hand, you have a whole bunch of historical data or data from other countries. They are different. So again, you know that they are not totally useful. So you can sort of combine them together in the way that you only generalize the patterns from the historical data that is useful and comparable to your business, and then upweight your testing data that is available to you. So sort of combine them together to extract the best information you can to inform your decision-making. So this is some recent research. I put some references there. If you're interested, you have the reference list in the end. Okay, imagine that if we have used a different method to reduce the problem, but we still haven't solved the problem yet. So we got a good data set, we have improved the quality, but how can we test if the fairness has been achieved or not? Right, I'll answer this question in a moment. Price optimization, such a hot topic, and I know that it's very controversial as well, but I want to ask the question, is price optimization fair? Well, let's look at the different regulations and also different perspectives from stakeholders. From the insurer's point of view, as far as I know, many insurers, you could think that the use of price optimization tools is simply a sound business practice that is widely used in many other industries. But we know that from Hugh's talk, this may not be the case given that there are many problems there. If the insurer prices two customers differently with the same risk profile, then it could be because they anticipate that the price sensitivity differs. Well, the consumers have a different view. They would think that this can be unfair because they have unfair penalty on the customer loyalty. and it imposed price increases on customers, not for their tendency to have higher claims, but just to have their tendency to be loyal. And what's even worse is that I didn't do any of this empirical research. I just read from some existing literature that some paper, they say that many of those less likely to shop around and for a better price are those low-income and vulnerable consumers. So that's, I think that's the biggest ethical concern here. So if we use, should we use price optimization or not? We should look at all the stakeholders' perspectives and think about, okay, who are being affected because of this? And do they deserve this penalty on this price? So another thing is that if, for example, those customers who are given a loyalty penalty and they also have certain protected attributes, say certain gender, certain racial groups, then it could also face the issue of unintentional proxy discrimination because you did not use the protected attributes directly, but you indirectly discriminate against those customers. So these are the concerns. Because of the concerns, many U.S. states, actually around 20 U.S. states, regulators have banned price optimization in the personal lines. So why personal lines? I think the commercial lines are usually more sophisticated, so they have the ability to shop around. It's really the personal lines who have more vulnerable cases there. And also a few years ago, the UK FCA banned the price walking. This is a special case of price optimization. Okay, so we have the different regulations internationally, but I think there's still a question that haven't been answered yet. That is, what is the welfare implications of such bans? We understand the regulators, they have some objective to achieve. Have they achieved that or not? So I think it's useful to look at what's the welfare implications of such bans. What do I mean by welfare here? It means the welfare of different stakeholders, say the firm's profits, that's what firms concerned about, or firm's market volume. For consumers, what's a consumer's utility? So this is I use a microeconomics definition to define the welfare. And in the second part of my talk, I would focus on developing a framework to do fair pricing. And I want to highlight that this is such a difficult problem. And it's so difficult that I'm not sure, how can we achieve that in the near future? Because we have to answer so many questions. Firstly, how to achieve fairness? Do you mean fairness in cost prediction or fairness in the final prices? Because insurance pricing, especially general insurance pricing, is such a complicated process. It includes cost modeling, demand modeling, price optimization, and also lots of subjective judgments at every stage. Right? How can we ensure that the entire process is fair? And do you mean fairness in terms of prices or markups? And they usually cannot be achieved at the same time. Also, depends on what you mean by fair. If you ensure fairness in prices, it may be unfair if you look at the markups or loss ratios, for example. So which dimension do you mean by fair? And which fairness policy or criteria to apply? There can be like 20 or 30 fairness criteria, and they cannot be met at the same time. And fairness in people's mind are so different. So which fairness criteria to apply? And the specific fairness criteria would impact the final output of different consumer groups. And also how to evaluate the cost of fairness. Who pays for that? So if I say this is my fair policy, then does it benefit more certain groups? Have you achieved your goal? How does it impact the firm's profits? How does it impact the competition in the market? So there are lots of things we have to think about. It's not just a fair or not fair issue. It's a holistic thing that we need to take all this into consideration. And throughout this talk, I would assume that let's consider males and females as a protected group. The only reason for that is that in my data set, I only have gender as a protected attribute. So I don't have any other attributes. So let's just assume that we have gender as a protected attribute. And I'll present you with an empirical case study and show you how I try to answer each of the questions, but there's lots of judgments needs to be determined at many steps. Okay, for my case study, I try to look at answer the question by looking at many of the potential fair policies that we could impose on different stages of the insurance pricing process. For example, we know that insurers have to develop the technical prices, right? And actually, the guidance resources produced by the Human Rights Commission Actuaries Institute, they largely focus on the technical prices. It does not touch on the market prices. But to be honest, as a customer, I don't really care about technical prices. I only care about the final prices I receive, right? No matter how fair you make the technical price, I don't care about that. So I look at to impose the fair policies on the technical prices and I'll impose fairness policies on the final market prices. I want to evaluate certain regulations. For example, price optimization ban. If we ban the demand modeling, ban price optimization, what could happen? Who will benefit from it? Who will lose from it? And how about the firm's profits? So let's briefly go through each of the policies. Like Rule C0 is constrained cost model, unconstrained cost model, so no regulation, free markets. Rule CA is that cost model with accountability. Here I use accountability just to mean that I know that for insurers, in order to make your model interpretable, usually you need to formulate the predictions as base risk times relativities. So I assume that even if you use your black box models, you still need to have these constraints. GOM can automatically give you this if you use the log link, but not the other model formulations. So I just put that as a constraint. Even if I use other model formulation, I have to be able to generate the base risk and relativities. And CU is a cost model with an awareness. That's basically don't use those protected attributes. And CDP is cost model with demographic parity, which means I equalize the predictions. For example, males and females, on average, they have the average premiums, technical prices in the portfolio. And Rule CC is a cost model controlling for the sensitive attributes. That's a certain fairness criteria recently proposed by some academics in the UK. So I just use that as another fairness criteria. And then for the pricing one, we also have P0, that's no constraint, free markets, no regulation. Accountable pricing is also make sure that your final prices can be written as base risk times relativities. And the price optimization ban, we just don't use the demand modeling and the price optimization. Pricing with demographic parity, similarly, equal price among different groups. Finally, pricing with actual group fairness. This criteria was proposed by Chris Dolman and Simanovich in 2018. So they proposed a specific fairness criteria, so I just also test that in my paper. Okay, what data did I use? I use that's the only data I have, the best data I can have access to. That's a very old French auto claims data. I use it all the time because as academics, I really don't have good data to play around. And I have the only protected attributes, it's gender. And I use the GLM models, Poisson times gamma regressions, and also XGBoost as two models to make sure that the model have robust results, and also test whether using a black box model give you different results. And then we have demand modeling. For demand modeling, it's even worse. We don't have any data sets to play around. So all I can do is that I just look at some published work in some well-established journals, just extract the parameter that they use in their paper. This is usually from a U.S. case study. So extract the price elasticities, demand parameters, and assume that it's still applicable for this French insurance data sets. So it's not a perfect case study because of the constraints of data set that I have access to, but I think it still convey useful message later when we look at the outputs. And then we do price optimization as well, and then we use some techniques to make sure that we can handle this. I won't go through the technical details, but I want to present some quick findings. The first finding is that fairness in machine learning, or because the cost prediction can be formulated as a machine learning, either it's GLM or XGBoost or neural network, whatever model you use, it's a machine learning task. So I call it fairness in machine learning. Cost modeling does not guarantee fairness in outcome. So you can see if you look at all, these are all the policies that are applied on the cost modeling, they give you very different results. And if I look at the group fairness line corresponds to CDP, when my prices are exactly the same, you can see that when there's a so basically the black dots and the black dots and the circle represent C0, which means there's free market, no regulation. All the other policies tend to move it towards the group fairness line, but not reach the fairness line. So this group fairness line is actually the fairness in final prices. Well, those dots and those circles represent, I have policies on the cost modeling. So none of them can reach the group fairness line in terms of final prices. So that means when you have fair policies only on technical prices, it does not guarantee fairness in the final prices. And if you look at further the males versus females, you can see that females generally on average in this portfolio have lower prices on average. And the fair regulation cost reduces the price gaps among groups. It's reduced the price gaps, but not exactly close the price gaps. How about this one? If we look at the markups, so previously a dimension looking at the final prices, look at the markups, what we can see is that, firstly, females have higher markups on average if you apply these policies. So these policies basically increase the females' markups. And the fair regulation on those cost modeling technical prices increases the markup gaps between gender groups. If you combine these two messages together, what it tells you is that apply fair policies on technical prices, reduce the price gaps between genders, increase the price markups. Then it's basically not achieved at the same time. What do you want to achieve? Do you want to reduce the price gap or reduce the markup gap? Second finding, fairness in prices does not equal to fairness in markups. So I think this is a similar message, but at this time I present you with some price regulations. So you can see that on the left-hand side, there are some price regulations. And this price regulation, you can see that the PDP, which is guaranteed that the two groups have equal prices, of course it sits on the group fairness line because that's what the constraint asks the algorithm to do. That's the only regulation that can meet this one. But for markups, you can see that the PDP can perfectly equalize the price between different groups, but creates a huge markup gap. It creates the biggest markup gap, while close the price gap. So that's a question you have to think about. Which gap do you want to close? The third finding, fairness accuracy trade-off does not equal to fairness welfare trade-off. I'll quickly go through this one. So I probably won't go through the explicit plots, but this is a message. Our empirical show that if you decrease your machine learning accuracy by only 0.5%, it can decrease 5% of profit and consumer welfare. The message is that small prediction accuracy drop can lead to big profit and welfare loss. So if you go to some machine learning engineer or data scientist, they would say that, okay, let's look at what's the cost of fairness. Then they usually look at the prediction accuracy loss. I want to say that we should focus on the final stakeholders' values, that is the consumer welfare and the firm's profits, or other measures of welfare, to make sure that you really look at the final outcome for your business, not just the prediction accuracy. In view of time, I'll skip all of them and jump to the final part. Takeaways. So the takeaway is that when we consider fair insurance pricing, let's consider the discrimination and bias over the entire decision-making life cycle. It's not just the technical price. It's not just the pricing. And even broadly, how about marketing? How about claims processing? How about fraud detection? Everything can have biasness and unfairness. And also, let's not just look at insurance. How about governments? How about financial services? Every business decision making deserves a fairness consideration. Secondly, if you have data quality issues, you can turn to some very recent techniques that academics developed and see some of them can be very useful for your business to improve your data quality. I want to say fair machine learning techniques cannot guarantee fairness in outcome because your decision making process is more complex than just an algorithm. Finally, let's focus on the ultimate objective of stakeholders. what's the real impact on firms and consumers. So I skipped lots of plots, but if you look at them, you will see that I actually did some welfare simulations to analyze each of the regulation impact. Because of time, I won't go through them, but it's written in the paper. The paper is in the reference list, and it's open access. Finally, I want to make sure I present this slide. So what should we do next? There's some open questions. I would like to call out for more research and broader research beyond insurance and pricing. Look at all the decision-making, all the industry sectors. Secondly, the regulators and supervisors should define supervisory expectations relating to fairness and fair discrimination. Otherwise, there are too many things to consider. Prices, markups, loss ratios, so many fairness criteria, so many stakeholders to take care of. And I think regulators and supervisors should give us some clear expectations. Of course, that would rely on a joint collaboration of all parties to work out what do we really value. And thirdly, is to develop guidelines to support informed decision-making, especially related to your final stakeholders' values, like firms' profits or consumer welfare. Last but not least, I would like to call for industry and academia collaboration and good data sets. So I really want to do research, but I really don't have any data sets to work on. So I hope this could change in the future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Faye, for Contact Back Talk. We've got a couple of minutes for questions, so we'll see how we go. But firstly, just to reiterate, if people are interested in those welfare results, download the PowerPoint from the website, and then there are some references there.
Yeah, so the result is on the fourth one, Shimo and Huang. It's basically include all the welfare results. It's on SSR and publicly available.
Cool. So I think my first question was, so lots of bias in data sets and humans and all those other things, but if you are a government and you're looking to solve a particular question, I guess the example that comes to my mind is sort of Europe introduced a ban on gender-based price discrimination in insurance products there. Is it that simple, or what steps would you recommend for a government or maybe a company trying to sort of solve a perceived discrimination issue?
Yeah. I think this is a very good question. I think it should include lots of stakeholders there. I definitely understand, for the example of gender-neutral pricing, from the ethical perspective, if attributes is uncontrollable, say gender satisfy this criteria, it's usually protected. And we, you know, it's sensible to not use that from the EU's perspective. That's an ethical consideration. But on the other hand, then what's the real implications for the markets, for consumers? I think there are more considerations we need to care about. So I would recommend doing some simulations, looking at the market and how it's impacted each one.
All right. And I'll stick in one more question, even though the bell's gone. But the results you sort of flicked through quickly, like if we define wellness as sort of welfare as the gap between what consumers are willing to pay and what they're actually paying, your results are suggesting that by introducing fairness, often we're decreasing welfare, because if we're increasing prices for women, then sort of the gap between those things will decrease their welfare, and the gains for men will sort of be less than that. Is that result dependent on the data and the work you've done, or is that result generalizable that you do have this genuine trade-off all the time?
Very good question. Thanks, Hugh. So actually, when we do this work, we firstly started from theoretical work. So we build on from models, assumptions, and we want to see if we can get some analytical solutions. It's better for us to communicate the results, but we failed. We proved that this is not a theoretical question. This is an empirical question. So the nature of the question means that every market can be different, and you need to look at all these assumptions. So back to your question, yes, all the assumptions matters for the outputs.
Very good. Well, let's thank Faye one more time for a great talk.
Thank you.